Cliff Jacobson is a man with a storied life. Eagle Scout, passionate canoeist, environmental educator, and outdoor skills writer. He's a featured speaker at the Boundary Waters Expo this weekend, and he joins us now in the studio to discuss his just-released book, Justin Cody's Race to Survival. Welcome, Cliff.
Well, hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Nothing like being in the canoe country this time of year.
Yeah, you picked a great weekend, or shall we just thank you for bringing the great weather here?
Well, I did. I planned it on purpose.
well, we thank you. And Cliff, first, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you became such a passionate outdoors person?
Well, I think I became a passionate outdoors person because I grew up in Chicago and I couldn't stand it. my dad loved the outdoors, and I was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout and Explorer Scout, and that's what really introduced me to the wilderness. And I became so passionate about it, I read everything in print about it. I mean, literally every book on camping and canoeing, and it was like I couldn't get enough of it, and I would dream about it because I know this sounds weird, but I had the gene. And, you know, I've taken so many young people and adults out on canoe trips over the years, and some of them, perfect weather, not a bug in the sky, not a cloud in the sky, perfect everything. They hate it. They want to get home. Maybe young people, they miss their boyfriend or their girlfriend, but they want to get home. I've had other occasions where it's been raining, it's miserable, it's so bad, I'm out of there. And you'll see some kids sitting out on a rock with a poncho over her head, loving every minute of it. So I've learned it's a gene. Seriously, it's a gene. Yeah. Either you have it or you don't. And if you don't have it, you know, you can maybe change hatred into tolerance or tolerance into like, but it's not going to go from hatred to love. I know I have two daughters. They love their daddy. Absolutely. They're nuts about me. I'm nuts about them. And they both hate camping and canoeing. So there you have it.
And it's not because you forced them to when they were
Well,
kids,
you know, I took them out when they were like little babies and whatever, but they never liked it. Their mother never liked it. It's a gene. And if you love it and you have a child that loves it, consider yourself very lucky.
So you got both copies of that gene.
I know, I do. Both copies.
And so you have spent a life as an educator in many different ways.
Well, I taught school for 34 years, mostly middle school, 13, 14-year-olds. I started out life as a forester, worked for Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service for a while, and then I went in the Army for a couple of years, and I decided my passion really was teaching, and so I got into teaching and did that for 34 years.
And so, you were teaching environmental studies, though,
yeah,
right?
I was teaching environmental science. It was a program we developed ourselves. It won a Minnesota State Program of Excellence Award. It was a pretty cool program. But since you're bringing up that subject, the tragedy of environmental science is we cannot seem to break away from this high-stakes testing stuff. We cannot seem to break away from the testers who value the original biology, the original general science, and they want those questions on those tests, and we have to keep punching out those same kind of programs. And when we come up with a program like environmental science, kids love it, parents love it, but it's not on the test.
Right,
so
much
it doesn't last.
Much
dies.
Of it is really experiential, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we really don't want to get started talking about education, because I can do that all night long because I have some definitely hard feelings for what's being done wrong right now in American education.
All right.
But that's probably a story for another time.
So then I'll shift the direction a little bit, though. Although still, really, in many other ways, you have been an educator by taking people out canoeing and into the wilderness, and by writing books. You've written numerous books about skills that are needed to be out in the wilderness.
Yeah, well, I started out doing that, to be honest with you, not because I really wanted to write, but because I had literally read everything in print about it, and so much of it was wrong. So much of it was written by people who weren't spending enough real time in the woods, and they were researching. And the research wasn't always right. So I really just kind of got mad about it and said, well, by golly, I'm going to do something about it. And then it just kind of mushroomed. I don't know, maybe people realized that what I was telling them was the real deal.
All right. Well, now you've taken a new angle in your writing, though, because you've written a novel, the Justin Cody's Race to Survival, just published, just came out. The book, briefly for our readers to whet their appetite, tells of the adventures of Justin Cody and his grandfather, Henry. Justin is 13 years old, addicted to his phone and video games, not doing well in school. His grandfather takes him on a fly-in wilderness canoe trip where they discover a crashed military drone. Criminals looking for the drone separate Justin from his grandfather, who both have adventures to try to survive and get to the meeting place that was supposed to pick them up. And so adventures ensue.
Well, you know what? That's interesting, because in a sense, this is a novel, and in a sense, it isn't. And the idea of it came to me one day. I was sitting there, and I was thinking, a lot of kids, how do I get young people involved in canoeing and camping? How do I do this? And I said, kids who love canoeing and camping, you know, I got a lot of books that are used by the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts and stuff, that they can read those books. But a lot of kids don't know if they like the wilderness or not, because they got their head in their cell phone all day long. So I said, how do I get their head out of the cell phone? And I said, what I think I want to do is I'm going to write a riveting novel in 13-year-old, because I know the age group really well. I taught it for 35 years. So, I mean, I'm not going to talk down to them, and I'm going to write a riveting novel that will sort of grab them, suck them in, if you will. But in the process, I want it to be different than any other type of book like this, because I want them to learn something.
Yeah.
So in this book, it has literally, what I've done is I've included dozens and dozens of wilderness skills. You know, how to build a fire, how to be safe from wildlife, how to deal with a lightning storm, how to find food, how to set up a camp, and yeah. so forth and so on.
Yeah, those essentials,
okay?
Of shelter, food,
yeah.
staying
so,
warm.
Right, and so I figured that this way kids will get educated too. So I figured after authoring 15 some books, whatever, hundreds of magazine articles, hey, publishing this is going to be easy, you know? So I query my publisher, which was Falcon, and they said, well, no, Cliff, you know, we don't do fiction. We do nonfiction. But if you want to write a how-to canoeing and camping book for kids, you know, we might be interested in that. I said, well, I got one for you. I said, but it's part fiction. Yeah. Well, we don't do that. So then I sent out queries to about 40 different publishers, and it was the same thing. A, they wouldn't read the book. They didn't want to read it. Fiction publishers came back with, we don't do nonfiction. Nonfiction publishers came back with, we don't do fiction. So I didn't know what to do with this thing, because I started this thing a couple years ago, and I said to myself, what do you want to do? You want to self-publish it? Come on, it costs a few thousand bucks to self-publish it. I mean, with due respect, you just don't make money off of books like this. They're not book sellers. You know, you might in the lifetime of the book maybe make $1,000, couple thousand. If you're lucky, you might make three. I'm not going to, at my age, I'm not going to put $3,000 into $4,000 into something like this. And so I gave it away. I put it on my website as a download, okay? And I didn't know what I was doing, because I put everything on there in Microsoft Word, okay? So stuff didn't always come up right. The pictures weren't right. But I didn't want to pay somebody to fix it, because at this point I didn't care about it. And then I put a little note on my website. I said, interested publishers, please give me a call. So I got this call from these two guys in Minneapolis who wrote a very well-received book called Adventure North. I'm sure you guys have probably heard. When these two guys were young, Sean and Colton, when these two guys were 18 years old, they retraced Eric Severide and Walter Port's canoe trip to Hudson Bay.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they made so many mistakes. I was rolling my eyes. How did you guys survive? You didn't know anything. And I'm trying not to be critical. I'm trying. And then I woke up and I said, Cliff, they were 18 years old. You realize right. how dumb you were at 18? You know? So, but
it's amazing that any of us survived being 18.
Yeah, so they liked the book. They were willing to think outside the box. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so basically, this is a book outside the box. I wrote it for teenagers, young teenagers, basically 13, 14, 15 in there. Younger kids can read it if they read really well. They'd have to read pretty well. Adults seem to love it. Right. And now I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know. But I did teach kids long enough that I pretty know how they think, what words they use, how they act when they get excited, and so forth. No. But my main intent at doing this was to try to get some education into these kids' heads, so when they come to places like the Boundary Waters, they know what to do. Not about survival, but about thriving, or thrival, if you will, enjoying it.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. And it's a funny thing, because I was on an interview once, and the guy said, "Cliff, you know, when was the last time you were cold and miserable on a wilderness trip?" And I said, "I think I was about 11. And he looked at me like didn't believe it. And that's the problem that people who don't have skills have. They think you go out in the wilderness and you're miserable. No. It was like, who was it? Was it Nesmuk or George Washington Sears? I may have the name wrong. There was two guys that wrote at the same time period at the turn of the century. He wrote, I go to the woods, or I come to the woods to smooth it, okay? Not to rough it. Things are rough enough at home. So.
I like it. So yes, it's a very interesting approach that, having read it, I'd say is highly educational for anyone of any age who's learning to be in the outdoors, because it puts it in the context of being outdoors, of what you need to do to get along. I like one little quote in there, though, that I think everybody should pay attention to, which was, "You can never have too many storm lines."
Yeah, well, that's true. There are certain skills that one develops. You know, I fight with people. There are certain things I fight with people time and time again. I can't seem to get past it. One is always have a plastic ground cloth inside your tent, not under the floor like they all tell you to do. And the other one is the thing with the bears, that the bears climb trees and you put your food up in a tree. The bear's going to get your food. It's as simple as that. It won't get you, but it'll get your food. You know. So, but yeah, you can never have too many storm lines.
Yeah. And now I really need to know as well. So our young protagonist, you know, on his own, reading a book that he had from his grandfather to help him figure out on his own what to do, was able to get by. I mean, he was able to have the excitement of catching fish for food, of, you know, being able to set up his shelter, of being able to keep warm, you know, when he didn't have a sleeping pad and the ground was cold, to put spruce boughs on the ground.
But notice there was a disclaimer on some of that stuff, like the spruce boughs. I was very clear that, you know, this is strictly a survival thing, and he also uses birch bark, which is also a disclaimer. So there is an environmental theme that goes through the book that has to be tempered from the fact that he's got to survive.
Right, he's got to survive. And in that context as well, one of the other things that he had to do to survive that I am maybe going to even just inquire about a little bit was that he caught and ate a porcupine.
Oh, yeah. You know what's interesting? I'm glad you brought that, because that's really interesting. The fictional part of that book, except for the flying saucer and the bad guys, mm-hmm. the dragon, take the flying saucer and the bad guys out. The fiction is not fiction.
Right.
It's all nonfiction. I mean, all those things actually did happen, either to me or to people I know. The part with the bull boat, where Grandpa tries to build a bull boat, no, I don't know anybody who's done that, but that's a realistic thing. But everything else in there, especially in the story of with the porcupine, about how his grandpa once was with a bunch of Indians in Saskatchewan, and one of the Indian young people killed a porcupine when we had plenty of food. I was actually on that trip.
So you have tasted porcupine?
No, I haven't. But what happened was we were camped with a float plane came in, and there was a mining mining operation, and these guys were all working for the mining company, and they brought in a whole bunch of fresh food, and we cleared out a spot for the beaver or the helicopter to land, and so they gave us all this fresh food, and then here were these the Indian workers, one of which went out and killed a porcupine. And then his father, who was also on that trip with him, just chastised him. He said, you know, look at all the fresh food we have. You don't just kill a porcupine. You know, you kill that only, that's only an emergency.
Right.
So that was actually that's a true story. Most of the stories in there actually are true and really did happen.
Sure. Okay.
You know.
So I am curious, too, on a very personal level. In this book, there is one major protagonist, a young boy, but a second one, his grandfather. Just wondering, how much of you we see in in each, and perhaps even both of those individuals?
Well, actually the book that's sort of contained everything is sort of modeled after my flagship book, which is Canoeing Wild Rivers. That's kind of what I was thinking of when I wrote it. But I had to give this kid some way to grow. He didn't like to read. He didn't want to read. And now he's faced with the problem of either he does or he dies. Okay. The only thing that I question the realism of is would he have tried to walk 200 miles to meet that float plane? But my experience with kids that age, 13, that's probably what he would have been thinking, that he really had to do it because he was in this totally isolated area. His grandfather says, nobody's going to come looking for him. We got to meet this plane. And the kid says, yeah, well, what if we don't? And his grandfather says, trust me, we will,
or something
to that effect.
Okay.
So ultimately, it turns out this kid had the gene after all, because he actually grows to love the wilderness.
Yeah.
And I don't want to tell how it ends or whatever.
That's right. We've got to keep something in suspense. But things to not keep in suspense. I mean, you are an adventurous person. You do a lot of canoeing still. What's your next big adventure?
Well, you know, I'm 78 years old, going to be 79, okay? And I can't do these big, heavy, tough portages anymore like I used to. So I've done so much stuff in Canada. I mean, I've seen my thousands of caribou and my muskox and my grizzly bears and my polar bears, and the list goes on. And I love all that. But, you know, now there's kind of gray at the end of the tunnel, and I want to do some other things. So what I'm doing now is I'm kind of focusing on American tropical and desert rivers. And like, for example, last fall, we did the Yellowstone River in Montana in solo canoes. Now, that was a rush. I mean, we were running 4-foot waves in these little solo canoes. That was a rush. And in November, we're going back and we're going to do my favorite U.S. river, which is the Rio Grande. We did 240 miles of the Rio. Oh, I've done the Rio Grande 3 times. This will be the 4th time. I just love that river. I mean, you got Mexico on one side, the U.S. on the other. You meet wonderful, wonderful Mexican people as you go along. It's the most isolated river in America, literally. I mean, if you crash and burn on the Rio Grande, you got 60 or 80 miles of everything that bites, cuts, burns, whatever, okay? And there's nothing. I mean, even the trails, they have old trail maps of the Big Bend National Park. Try to find those trails. Try it. You take off for 10 minutes in one direction, you're going to be so cut up and you're going to be so hurt, you're heading back to the river.
So you've got a good adventure plan for yourself.
I do. You know, but it's interesting. I do the Rio Grande, and people say to me, oh, Cliff, I would never do that river. The Mexican druggies will get you. Or they would say, Cliff, I would never go to northern Canada. I mean, those bears will get you. And when we canoed across the Everglades, it was, how many pythons did you see? Okay, the pythons are going to get you. So, you know, I think some of these people, they'd be wise just to stay by their TV set.
Right, you know? Right. We've been talking with Cliff Jacobson, renowned, passionate outdoors person, writer, educator, and now writer of the book Justin's Cody, Race to Survival. You can hear more of him at the Boundary Waters Expo this weekend. Cliff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, my pleasure, and thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. And best to everyone out there who loves wild places and the magic of canoes.